What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 49 of The Overview. I'm Chanman V, and joining me today is Fish Sticks. Back as always. What's up, buddy?
Hey, hey. We've got Jason back. I'm so excited.
Yes.
That Jason's back.
Back from vacation in the exotic lands of Thailand.
He's already trolling us before the show even started. So it's going to be a good one.
No proof.
How you doing, buddy?
That's fake news.
Fake news. Yeah, we're used to fake news here, man. Fake news is real news here, man. So how was vacation? Good?
Yep.
That's it?
I mean, dude.
You
went
to my private life,
okay?
Oh, okay.
I went to Thailand, had fun.
Okay.
End of story.
How long did you go?
No massages.
How long did you go?
My feet eaten by fish, though. That was very scary.
Oh, yeah. That is weird. They do that here, though, too. Yeah. That whole pedicures or whatever.
Yeah, and I also did the ice cream thing that everyone always sees on the internet where they like spread it out on this like frozen surface and they like, roll it up into these little rolls.
Yeah.
That was amazing. I actually loved it.
Oh, okay. Cool. Life experiences, man. That's what it's all about. Well, we've got Jake returning from last week. Since you were so good last week, we just had to bring you on again, and particularly because there was this huge news that just happened that you hinted at last week.
Indeed.
Yeah, so.
Couldn't drop anything official.
Yeah. Well, welcome back to the show, man. It's going to be great to talk to you about lots of big stuff here with the PTRs and patches. All right. Well, anyways, let's hop into the what we're going to be doing this week. Again, the latest patch kind of rolled out with the whole Bastion nerfs. So we can talk a little bit about that actually in production. Then PTR has a lot of changes. New character, a new hero, Orisa, is out and about in the PTR, as well as the latest patch that was announced last night with some big changes to some folks like Winston Zen and Ana. So we'll dive into that. Some news, particularly with Hammer and LG, as well as some more details with Blizzard and some of the teams, or what they're looking for in terms of the Overwatch League, and as well as some other leagues that are starting up. Carbon Series, Jake can give us the lowdown on that. And then Apex, of course, is getting into the nitty-gritty. We have our first semifinalist determined already, so we'll talk about all those matches that have been going on. All right, let's start off with the latest production patch. I have to actually clarify these patches, since there's so many. So we're talking about the one that fixed Bastion's brokenness, I guess you could say, which was reducing the damage reduction to 20%, and then setting the max total damage reduction, even with any kind of abilities or ultimates from other heroes, to be 50%. So any thoughts on the patch so far? I mean, there were some other little things too, but that was the big one.
It's basically the Bastion anti buff patch.
Yeah.
So everyone had the pleasure of playing with Bastion in this incredible state for their placement matches. Yeah. And then the week after placements, they revert Bastion back to a more reasonable state. And this is incredibly obvious. Everyone kind of knew this was coming. I think even on the show, I don't remember if we said this on the show or if it was in private, I can't remember, but I think we were definitely saying, like, yeah, it's going to be like a couple days until Bastion gets patched. Like, right. This is definitely not going to like continue. And everyone was right. So from 35% extra damage mitigation in tank mode or sentry mode, it's down to 20%. I guess the interesting question for me, and I'd pose this to Jake and I guess Jason, whatever.
Wow.
Is Bastion still, I mean, he's obviously still quite buffed up from before this season. Now that he's been kind of adjusted a little bit, is Bastion still like a viable pick at a high level?
No.
No?
I mean,
nope.
All right, like, there were places that even like pre-buff where Bastion, like post, you know, the beta nerfs, where people were running Bastion, right? People were running it on like Nobani sometimes there's like some weird Hollywood strats where you'd like holding cafe with a Bastion. So there's like places that just by the way Bastion works, he's like always going to be viable. But I actually think it's interesting that he's a lot easier to play around now. Like the big problem before was just that with that incredible resistance in turret mode, especially when you stack it with the nano, you just get to these like, you know, busted combos where you just can't kill the nano Bastion unless you can like CC him for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And it was just broken. Like, you know, and that was the reason people could run Bastion, because it was so incredibly powerful. Like, if you can't like CC the Bastion, you lose the fight for one ultimate, and it's just a cheap nano boost. Like, you know, it's like you don't even need a tank mode. It's like a tank, honestly, is probably worse than just sitting in the turret. On the
yeah, that's true.
Like, it's but now I don't know. I honestly am interested to see. I think he'll be picked even less now, because I think two crucial changes, one of which is that he can't hit headshots anymore in sentry mode, and the other one being that the spread starts at its maximum value. It makes a character like Pharah really, really powerful against Bastion. Because if you're just at a long enough range as Pharah, you just will never die to the Bastion. Like, you easily will be out healed. You don't even need a Mercy. Just an Ana can, you know, shoot you every once in a while. Honestly, a Zen Orb would probably be enough. there's characters that are always, they're going to be really good at dealing with Bastion, because he just can't respond at the ultra long ranges. He just has no answers, except getting on recon mode, and then you just have a kind of a crappy Soldier 76. So I think the nerfs were well done, especially the nerf that no character in the game for any reason can get above 50% damage resist. I'm glad they put that in.
Yeah.
You don't need shit in the game that lets characters have like 2000 effective HP, you know, without just like any ultimates or anything, right? Like, you know, it's one thing for like a Winston to get nano boosted and be unkillable, but like in his ult form or something. But, you know, when a character like Bastion is unkillable, that's a much bigger issue.
So
I think the nerfs were well placed, and I honestly just don't think he's going to be a problem anymore. Just a niche pick to hold last.
All right. Jason, what do you think?
I did have a situation. I was playing ranked the other night, and I did have one situation where there's Bastion set up. You okay there, Jason? And he got the Bastion was in sentry mode, and the Ana had healing nated his friendly Bastion. I was just focusing heals, and I think there's a Mercy healing them too. Mm-hmm. There is still a situation where you cannot kill that Bastion unless there's like several people on your team shooting at him. Because I was playing Pharah, hit like five direct rockets, and his health never went down like below 2/3. But I don't know, Jason, what are you seeing on the EU server? Any Bastion in your ranks?
Nope.
No.
Actually, nope. That only Bastion I saw was me playing it like today because I was told to play it. I don't know. I'm gonna be like that guy and be like, all right, you know, the Bastion, they hot fixed him, whatever you want to call it. But the fact that he was even put in the game in his current form, like, does that mean Blizzard's finally gonna start paying attention to what they put on the PTR and what actually makes it to live?
Well, the thing about the PTR is, well, we all know that the PTR is like the staging, the staging area where they put the build there while they're waiting for approval from the consoles and things like that. I mean, there is some part of the PTR where I think they are looking at data, which might be, you know, maybe the first week before they can, before there's a cutoff where they can't make any changes anymore. So, I mean, they do some. It's just, it's not long enough, clearly, right? Because this Bastion change, I mean, it was pretty clear it was not going to be received well, and it would break, you know, what we were talking about as that was a really great meta at the time. So I don't know how they decided to do that, and they just released it. It's almost like they're just going to release stuff in production, which, you know, it kind of sucks for the competitive, you know, Overwatch, you know, when this kind of happens, especially mid-tournament. But it's actually not that bad as long as they're able to, you know, revert these things very, very quickly. You know, so I don't know. PTR, I don't know. Is there even is it necessary? Do you guys actually still want to see it? Because if you do want to see it, we have to get people on the PTR.
Yeah, I think there's more of the people problem. On it.
Are there really?
I think so.
The PTR is never going to be like a meaningful way to understand balance because it's never going to be.
That's like, what I mean. It's like
the problem is you can't actually recreate like a competitive, like a high level competitive environment with 10,000 people. Like, you know, it's not going to happen. Even if the PTR is like biased for high level players, like you're probably more likely to play on the PTR if you're like you're more invested in the game, you spend more time in it, you're more interested in the upcoming patch, you want to prep for it. Yeah. So it's probably biased towards like the slightly higher skill ranges. But even then, there's no way to actually tell what's good and what's bad until you play with like an actual team. I mean, ranked is just one thing, but I just see ranked as like a minor part of the game. It's just like a way to practice. Like in terms of how actual teams are going to use things, there's literally just no way to know. Even if teams are scrimming on the PTR, you won't really be able to get a sense of like what the new meta is going to be until actually people are getting their teeth into it and playing it in tournaments and everything.
Yeah, I mean, balance, you can't measure balance, but bug fixing, you know, if there's something that's just broken, you could do that.
I think you can measure balance. Like, really? The fact that you don't even need to be playing at the highest level to be able to abuse the changes to Bastion shows that there wasn't much thought into going into, like, is it balanced coming in live? And I think back to, like, League of Legends, and I haven't paid attention to the game in a year, but at least in the time frame that I was casted and actively involved in it, there was only one hero ever released, or like one major, maybe two major patches that broke the game. And like one was Vayne coming into the game, and one was Black Cleaver being completely, or not having a unique passive, meaning you can stack armor debuffs on people constantly from multiple sources. I feel like I don't know. I feel like I'm seeing too negative, but like there's, in theory, like changes you can do or changes that you're going to implement that you can see are going to be too strong or too powerful. And I feel like maybe that should have been one. Luckily for them and luckily for all of us, they changed it quickly. Mm-hmm. Like they fixed it after a couple of days. So it's not really in the end that big of a deal. But when you have tournaments going on like Apex and stuff, like that could drastically affect it. Luckily for Apex, they're running on, you know, a previous patch. But yeah, like thankfully. Other tournaments, you don't have that luxury, right? So it can be very detrimental to, I guess, the competitive scene. Which is something that they're really starting to push for because they started release or some information's been leaked about the Overwatch League.
So you're saying that internal testing should be better?
I know for Riot standards, like they have like high level players, like not obviously the pros, not the challenger, but like Jat, who is an ex-pro player, Kobe ex-pro player, like people who actually played at a really high level internally playing the game and testing all these mechanics. So like if you had Jake there at Blizzard headquarters, you know, working for them, playing Bastion, he probably would destroy everyone. And then they would be like, oh, okay, so if a high-level player could do this with Bastion, maybe we need to take a look at it. I don't obviously know who's in the internal testing team for Blizzard, so you know, no offense to any of them. But there are signs you can see, I think. I feel like.
Well, to Blizzard's credit,
go ahead.
Their principal character design and balance guys are in the biggest competitive Overwatch Discord server, and if you're a pro in there's no excuse for not giving your feedback. And Slasher really harped on this as one of the guys who runs that Discord last week when this patch came out. He's like, look guys, I talked to Zan, the principal character balance design, the guy who's like leading this, one of the top executives and designers of this game, is in that Discord asking for your feedback. And only two pros, apparently, in the course of that entire last PTR actually reached out and gave any input at all. So to Blizzard's credit, they are positioning themselves in a way that the pros community should be able to give input. They have put those feelers out there and said that they want to get that input. I do agree with you on one hand, Jason, but also on the other hand, they did revert it pretty quickly. And I have a prediction that this PTR, the most recent changes, which we're going to start talking about in just a second here, I have a prediction that we're not going to see all of these changes go through. I think this is going to be the turning point for the PTR.
Yeah,
I really hope that you're right in that sense. I mean, I think some things like the Bastion changes to me were like, that to me was like evidence that Blizzard doesn't have good players like testing their games, or that the developers aren't actually like they're not like actually good at the game. They don't really understand how it works. Because when you put a percentage damage resistance, I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like every like pro player looked at those patches and was like, "What? Like 25% spread reduction on 25% spread reduction is massive on the recon mode. So it's a huge buff to recon mode. There's a bunch of like mechanical buffs, like you can heal through damage and while moving, that are just sort of intangibles. I don't blame them for not being able to like predict the outcome of stuff like that because it's, you know, it's kind of hard to tell. It's you know, but when you take a character and you give him a percent damage resistance, if you understand how the game works, you should realize that that means that all healing is more efficient and all damage is less efficient. So given that healing is incredibly cheap in Overwatch compared to any other game with healing, like TF2 or something, it's so easy to heal people to full. Like if you stop shooting someone for like 1 second, they're going to be back to full again with Ana in the game. And so when you put like a character that's just inherently better at receiving heals and harder to kill, that can also heal himself, and there's things like bound, you know, there's just so many things stacked up to make adding percent damage resistance a really bad mechanic to add, on top of not realizing that it would like combo with nano boost, despite the fact that every team has been running an Ana like 95% of the time for months. Like, you know, like you don't think about the ways that people would combo Nana boost. Like every patch for like since Ana came out has been like, how do we make Ana the most busted?
I mean,
like, it was Beyblade, it was Soldier Aimbot, right?
It took like 30 minutes. It took like 30 minutes for somebody to come out with, you know, a GIF that had some ridiculous, you know, scenario with the Bastion, right?
Yeah, like you can survive like the ultimates Hanzo. just healing yourself. You can survive as a Spirit Dragon, you can survive a Deadeye with a Nano. It's like there's all these things that like it just clearly shouldn't be in the game. And like I don't even think you need to be that good. I think that it was funny because there's just like random people on Reddit who aren't like, you know, high skilled players are just like, this is silly. Like you could do dumb things with this. You know, like, and just like how obvious that was with the percent damage resistance. I don't know. That was really surprising to me. But just I think it also,
like, yeah, last the patch as well. Like, people who were 3,000 SR last season were sitting there at 4.2K with 40 hours on D.Va. The next most played hero they had was like Ana, because they were abusing the fact that she was stupidly overpowered.
Yeah. So I was going to wait for this email, but, you know, because we usually have a Q&A section, but this email has like a lot to do with what we're talking about here with damage resistance. So I'll bring it up. Nick D actually had a question for us. He asked, what do you think about Blizzard adding features that disguise and distort perceived health pools like Bastion's Ironclad damage reduction? With changes like these, 75 health is not really 75 health anymore. We added armor, but this is an unnecessary further complication. Another effect is that heal on Bastion is increased, like you said. Healing to 75 health on a tiered Bastion is as fast as on normal Bastion, but gives more durability in comparison. This distorts how players perceive health and could have been mitigated by his health value just changing. Do you agree that this is a bad thing? And I think, Jake, you were saying it is a bad thing, but you know, I guess on top of that, it's just like, what would you rather do to Bastion? Just give him health or actually give him armor again and have those separated? You know, just like half of this health pool is armor and the other half is health.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of changing his HP as he goes into sentry form, because like, I don't know how you would do that. Do you lose the HP when you go out of sentry form? Does mm-hmm. it like regenerate if you rapidly go into and out right. of turret form? Is that like, I mean, there would be like weird mechanics you'd have to sort out if you're going to do like a health value just changing based on abilities, which is previously was only existed in the game in like a few ultimates like Torbjorn and Winston. And they were really consistent. It's like, you know, Winston, you heal to 1,000 HP. Unless you're Baronated, you heal to 500 HP. Torbjorn, you just get like, I don't know how many armor, but a lot. You get like 400 armor or something. It's like, it's just like a consistent value and you just get it at the start. And like, that's it. Like, that's the only thing. But with Bastion's ability that there's no cooldown on, like, you know, you'd have to balance it differently and have to work differently. It couldn't just like heal you at the every time you did
it. Well, it doesn't heal you. I mean, you could easily just do it whatever the lower end of that is. So let's just say, I don't know, in turret form, you know, in turret form you have 150 at or I don't know, just 300 at max. And then when you're a sentry, I'm just throwing out examples, it was like 200. Well, whichever you switch, you're always going to switch to the lower one. So whenever you switch to the one that has a higher hit point pool, you don't go back up to full health. You just go 200, you know, whatever
state
you have.
Percent based.
I'd like to see a change. Like, I think a way you can make the change work would be like in recon mode, all of his HP is just standard HP. And then when you go into turret or tank, it all becomes armor, or like you know, 80% of it becomes armor or something, which because it's much more efficient than real HP.
Yeah.
Because of the damage reduction and stuff. I mean, like, there's ways you can make it work, I think. But I think ultimately it's just this is like a broad philosophical thing, but I just think the Blizzard's approach to balancing is really weird. Like, for a long time, I thought that mostly what they were doing was trying to make the game fun for people of like all skill levels and trying to have like incorporating how fun it is to play for like everyone. And the thing is, the only groups of people that could really deal with Bastion were really coordinated high skill players. Like, the way you deal with Bastion, even when he was like really overpowered, was having really, really great coordination and everyone working together to focus them down at the same time. You know, when you bio nits, when you have 4 seconds to kill the Bastion while you can't heal, and like if you don't take advantage of that, then he heals to full and you die. So it's like, you know, that's something that for the vast majority of the player base, it is not possible to like really get the whole team to focus something for 4 seconds. Like, it's not really going to happen in that kind of time frame. People aren't going to hit enough shots, and the Bastion just has to hold right click. So I thought that was a change that was like really disproportionately. I mean, it was bad for like the pro scene because people could still abuse it at a high level, but it exponentially worse the lower your skill level is, because it doesn't take any skill to like get healed on Bastion. Yeah. It takes a lot of skill to like burst a Bastion through that much resistance. So it's a change that like made the game, I think, worse for everyone, but had a far bigger negative impact on like, you know, newer players or relatively lower skill players who have trouble with things like that.
And getting back to the question itself, I mean, I think it is harder to understand now too. And you almost have to do math, you know, all this damage reduction and how much damage each of the characters do and the fire rates and things. Like, you have to figure out, you know, in some complex way, like what it really takes or what the power level your character is against Bastion. And that's definitely not very good for casual players, right? We do want it a little bit simpler than that. I think armor was probably the limits of which, you know, you could complicate it, because it was just a separate kind of pool of health. But having it just be global, it is much, much harder. So I actually think this email is really valid. I think they should think about that, like having a global reduction like that. It is not necessarily great for the game.
What's kind of funny? Go ahead, Ben.
I don't really have too much to say other than I don't think this is a big issue on a personal level. I like having different types of health pools, like armor. And the main reason for that is because it means that different characters have different ways of interacting with that. Like, Tracer's spam is going to do less to armor because of its properties. So I don't know. I don't see it as a problem. Yes, it can be a little confusing, but I think even newer players will understand after a couple hours.
I find it kind of funny though that, like, okay, I could be wrong, but I feel like I'm really right on this one, that it was said that they were trying to find a way to make Bastion not so strong at the lower levels and more viable at the high levels, and then they just made it really, really, really strong at low levels.
Every level.
And too strong at high levels. Yeah. But, oh God, I had a thought and it just disappeared. I literally just had a thought and it disappeared.
Unlucky.
Okay, we'll skip over that for now.
I mean, I think
Oh, I remembered. I just found it funny that they buff Bastion right after or in the segue between nerfing triple quad tank setups to going to dive comps now, where Bastion's completely useless, like, against proper teams. Which is, like, we'll get into a little bit later on with obviously the patch changes or the new right. The new PTR changes. But I just thought it was funny. Like, if they did this Bastion change a little bit ago, maybe like a month or two, maybe triple quad tank would have been a little bit more difficult to pull off, but
I think old D.Va would have dealt with Bastion pretty efficiently, just because you can hook him out of turret form. Because the fact that hooking him takes him out of turret form means that you can just burst him, because he loses the resistance. So I still think, I don't even think he would have dealt with it. I don't even think even the most OP Bastion would have really dealt with quad tank, but just because it was really because D.Va was so busted, on top of Ana being busted. I mean, and both characters are still good.
That D word?
I hate D.Va the Passion, sorry.
Kind of an anti-fun hero, but also a fun hero.
Anti-fun, but fun. It's only fun when you're playing it. It sucks to play against it, right? Okay, well, why don't we move on to the PTR? And the big news of the PTR, at least initially when the PTR first came out, was our new hero, Orisa. And she's the new tank hero that we were all trying to guess at. And sure enough, she is a tank. She is an Omnic, or a robot that, it's Effie, right? Effie programmed. So I think a lot of people that were guessing that were actually correct. But a lot of her abilities were revealed, and kind of want to see what you guys think of, just the hero itself. Have you guys gotten a chance to play it on the PTR at all, or... I mean, there's a lot of 6v6 Orisas when I was playing it, so it's hard to judge how good she was, but I think it's better now.
I like the character, although I think the really impactful change is that Zen is amazing against that hero, right? Because she is like a big ult farm for Zen. But the fact, I mean, I think that the Zen change is reflective of some really, really bad things, but it's also going to, I think, make Orisa a very weak hero if the Zen change goes live. Crucially, the one that lets you Discord people through shields.
Okay, we'll show the patch in a second, but I just kind of want to see what your thoughts are on just Orisa first and her tool set and everything.
Yeah, well, the idea behind this character is to create another tank that is at least somewhat more similar to Reinhardt. I mean, if you look at every tank in this game, Reinhardt is the only one that doesn't have a ton of damage output, and really the primary function of the character is just to shield and create mobility and utility for the rest of the team. So that's the whole idea behind Orisa, is that they're trying to create another character that can be a core tank to facilitate your team, moving through choke points, you know, going attacking, got an ultimate that really is interesting in my opinion and affects everyone else on the team. So that's the general idea here. Question is, have they actually achieved that? Is this actually something that could replace a Reinhardt? Or if you're not doing a dive comp, are you going to still, is Reinhardt still going to be a must pick? Jason, I know you had a chance to play and have some thoughts about that.
I don't know. Sadly, I only got to play when it was 6v6 Orisa's because you couldn't ever click it quick enough. I don't know. To me, her big selling point is that she can like force a fight every, was it 6 to 8 seconds, mm-hmm. With her right click halt is what it's called.
We should just go through the abilities. Like her right click sends like an orb out that's kind of Symmetra like, but the orb pulls people into like
it is a vacuum.
Yeah, it's like a vacuum that pulls it in. Yeah, it's like a vacuum. So as the orb's going, it kind of pulls them in, and then it explodes at the end, I believe. And then there's like a big vacuum, like a really short one that happens at the end. And then the left click is her machine gun, which is, how would you describe it? So it's like plasma. Bunny blaster versus
it's plasma.
Just plasma. Okay, just a plasma gun.
It's literally just plasma from Quake.
Yeah. That's true. Okay, yeah, that's true. Okay, so plasma gun from Quake. That's a good description. And then her E is just a big armor boost. You know, just like a sudden big old. She gets a bunch of hit points. Her ultimate.
Also, she can't be
shattered. She can't be.
Yeah, she can't. That's right.
She gets a 50% damage resist for the whatever 4 second duration. But she also can't be stunned or CC'd. I don't know if she can be hooked, but she can't be shattered. She can't be flashbanged.
Can't be charged.
It can't be pinned. The right just hits her and falls down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Basically, it's like a cleanse, like a 4 second self cleanse, from CC. I don't know how the hook interacts with it because I haven't tested that specifically. But
oh, she should be immune to that too.
Just can't be CC'd. Yeah. I think I would assume she can't be hooked either.
Yeah.
I assume she can't be slept. I don't actually know about the sleep though in particular.
Okay. And then her ultimate is this. She kind of throws out something like a Mei throws out. You know, just like a little floating thing, and then it ends up turning into this. I don't even know how you describe it.
Supercharger.
Yeah, it's like it lands on the ground. Yeah, it's like a supercharger that has these lightning bolts that, you know, it's an actual structure on the ground that actually has these electricity that's kind of running through it, and it damage boosts everything like around
it. Mercy beams.
Can you heal? Can you toggle? Right? Didn't they add that? You can decide if you want it to be a healer or a damage thing.
Someone's, I didn't know that. They did.
I could be wrong about that. I don't know. Someone just said.
No, there's no healing, just damage.
That would be interesting.
Maybe that's what we wanted, but I guess it's just a damage boost thing. I don't know if that was what someone wanted to have happen or something that actually was there.
Yeah.
But basically, yeah, AoE damage boost, really, really long range, but requires line of sight. Seems good.
Yeah. So
that's toggle like a mercy beam though. If you're in its line of sight and you hop out of its line of sight, it stays on you for like a second or two, so you can kind of dance that line if you're want to.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. When to sum up her toolkit before we start talking. Yeah.
Her right click, her halt, the graviton surge, she can basically throw every, I think it's 6 seconds or 8 seconds. Mm-hmm. I feel like D.Va is like gonna completely hard counter that. I mean, one of her mechanics is to kind of force an engagement in ways that other tanks can't. And that gets completely mitigated by a D.Va. The upside of what she has though, is a shield, and I remember seeing someone on Reddit describe the way that they used it was you throw it into the air, if you're more of a stationary defense on the defending side, throw it straight up in the air. It comes down, and once it's out of your hands, like once it's actually released into the air, you start the cooldown already, so you can actually have the shields up a lot quicker. Like you have 1800 points of shield really quickly if you use it correctly. But I don't know. Like I saw someone in chat, One Punch Man talked about Orisa Winston Reinhardt with just shields everywhere. And if you cycle the shields, you can mitigate a lot of damage. That's going to be interesting to see. But I don't know. I'm not completely sold on her necessarily. Like her whole engagement factor is countered by a D.Va. She's not really fast. She doesn't have a movement ability like a D.Va fly, Winston jump, or Reinhardt charge. I don't know. I have to see how like she works in an actual game, like an actual competitive mode. It just doesn't seem like too strong, which I like. I'd rather see a hero come out that's a little bit weak in the beginning and just get tweaked slightly. Unless you pull an Ana again, then we're all screwed. But we'll see.
I honestly think Fortify is going to be a really interesting part of her kit. It only lasts a couple seconds, but being completely immune to sleeps, being completely immune to ananades, like all these different things. Or actually, I don't know. Does it include ananade? Is it like immune to like everything?
I had a feeling it was
action
immune
impairing
to everything.
Effects.
Yeah.
So, I think she actually has two shields. One is the barrier that she's able to project, and two is her hitbox. I mean, she's got a pretty massive hitbox. Imagine the Orisa going in front of the whole team, fortifying, will basically block any incoming CC attacks for the most part. And I think it's just going to be interesting. I don't really remember exactly the cooldown on Fortify, but I can imagine scenarios where you're maybe on 2 CPs or capture points or whatever. The rest of your team is falling and it's just an Orisa and maybe like an Ana left. But their Orisa just has so much survivability, pops Fortify at the right time. And then suddenly her barrier's off cooldown again. And I could just see just a, you know, excuse my friends, a shit ton of survivability for this character in the long run if you cycle these abilities well.
What about Discord?
Yeah, exactly. That's where Zen comes in here and just ruins the day.
I honestly, I didn't think about it until someone said in chats.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, like Discord, I think that you put a big factor of that. She's huge. You Discord her, and if a team is competent, they focus her down. I think it's almost like it's going to be really hard to burst heal her through the amount of damage of, you know, 5-6 people shooting her away with a Discord orb on her head. Even that 50% reduction gets completely nullified.
It's really slow too. That's the one thing.
The fact that you'll be able to discord her through shields, like she can't defend herself from getting discorded.
Yeah, positioning I feel is like super important with her. You know, unlike D.Va, where you could just it's super mobile, you can move around and always have the matrix attached to you. That shield is really strong, but it's immobile. It's like you throw it down and it's just there. It's like a Maywall. You just have to sit there behind it and position yourself around it.
You know what I hate though. I wish her fortify was like a charge, was like a gallop into the team. Like you build up speed over time to a certain point, they can keep channeling it as you keep going, because then you can actually get in their faces, pop a halt down, and then force a fight off of that. But instead, she's she's a tank, obviously, right?
The one thing I do love about the character design, though, is there's a lot of opportunity for synergies with the halt, the little mini gravitons. It's going to be super hard to get timings like this off, but you could, in theory, imagine a Tracer throwing a pulse bomb and then, like, oh, the pulse bomb's out. And then, like, you know, your Tracer's kind of down, 3, 2, 1, I'm going to pulse bomb. Then as soon as the pulse bomb's out, you try to throw out a halt and try to do, like, little mini big bang combos with that. Should be super cool. I also think that the barrier could have some neat applications. Imagine a McCree gaining high ground, throwing out High Noon. Typically going to be in an incredibly difficult situation and so susceptible to getting killed or slept or whatever, but you're able to throw a barrier up and that McCree suddenly has a lot of wiggle room to work with. So I think that's really the interesting aspect of this character is going to be how she synergizes with the rest of the cast. And you're totally right. I mean, this is a character that doesn't have mobility, so it's going to be very, very positioning oriented as well, which, you know, I like characters with mobility just on a personal level, but it is adding just another aspect to the game that I don't think we have right now.
I just don't think you're going to see tanks with the changes they're pushing to live. I don't think we're going to be playing tanks anymore. I mean, maybe Winston, because Winston's buffed again.
Let's go ahead and talk about that. Let me bring up this
good time to transition here.
Exactly. Let's talk about
Ribana.
This.
I guess it's time for Ribana to go. The era of Zen, the Omnicrisis begins again.
Yeah, the Omnicrisis begins again. Okay, so the first patch the first change that they're talking about is Ana, and her biotic rifle damage decreases from 80 to 60, and then her biotic grenade damage is reduced from 60 to 30, and then her healing's actually reduced from 100 to 50, so double nerf on the grenade. Thank God they didn't change her rifle, though. I was really afraid they were going to change her rifle, and that would affect
for healing,
they would affect dive comp and everything right now, I believe. So, hey, Ben, yeah, thoughts on this?
Did you also, like, splurge in your pants when you read the damage decrease from 80 to 60?
No, I'm still really confused by this, okay? So I do actually like the damage reduction on the biotic rifle. Yes, Jason, especially playing Pharah, it's like, if you're playing Pharah from long range, it's actually Ana's the only character that can actually kill you effectively, and she kills you really effectively. Like, 3 shots will kill you, so now it's going to take 4 shots, which is a huge deal for Pharahs out there. And this makes total sense. She's a support, supports should not be able to 1v1 diving Tracers and Genjis as easily as Ana has always been able to. But this is actually an insanely significant nerf because of the biotic grenade changes as well. Jake, you said rip Ana. I don't know if it's quite that bad. Like, Ana's still so good with the amount of healing she can do, but this basically nerfs every other aspect of her kit. Do you think this is going too far?
I think the reason it's going too far is because they buff Zen at the same time. I really hate that Blizzard does things like this. Like, why do they, like, this is a really huge nerf to Ana. Like, her ability to burst targets, she can't burst things that she slept anymore. Not really. Like you need your teammates to burst things, which is like a lot of the time can happen. But a lot of the time you were sleeping a Tracer at like, you know, 100 HP and then you could kill her, right? Or you left clicked her and then you slept her and you could kill her really easily. Now that's not the case. It's not the case anymore. Like it's almost impossible to burst things that you slept without significant team support, which isn't a huge nerf, but it matters. Another huge thing is that you can't defend yourself nearly as well as you used to be able to. The biggest thing was the self-heal. Even if you didn't get like the purple onto the Genji or whatever that was on you on Ana, you just heal yourself for 100 and then the Lucio heals you and you're just like incredibly hard to kill, and that's because your hitbox is like, you know, tiny. So there are a bunch of things that made Ana kind of crazy like that. And, you know, I like that they are trying to address those things, especially the fact that she could just like be a DPS half the time. If your team isn't hurt, then you just have an extra DPS. Who can snipe and is like genuinely a good sniper. You can just like 1v1 McCrees and stuff, which I think was a little overpowered. So I like the damage nerf. I don't like that they did the bio grenade at the same time. I really just wish Blizzard would do things slower, like just nerf the damage and see what happens. Okay, she's still strong, you nerf her again. She's still strong, you nerf her again. You don't need to like hit her with every nerf at once. And then combined with buffing Zen, I mean, Zen and Ana are heroes that are relatively close substitutes. I was actually posting in the feedback channel about this, but I don't know. We'll see how much the feedback channel actually matters. There's a lot of people posting a lot of really stupid stuff in there. So, you know, I don't really think they're going to pay that much attention to it, or they really shouldn't. But whatever, it's beside the point. I just think that it's really a big mistake to be buffing one of a substitute pair and nerfing the other, right? When you buff Zen and you nerf Ana. Because before, people were building comps around Ana. You're running three tanks because you know your Ana can sustain them with heals, and you know Ana's a really good character, so you want to run Ana. Now you want to run a Zen, so you just build a comp around a Zen. Like, people looked at the pick rate and they were like, wow, Ana's picked 95% of the time and Zen is picked, you know, 15% of the time. Wow, Ana must be way stronger than Zen. And the fact of the matter is that Ana is only a little bit stronger than Zen, like only, you know, 10, 15, 20% stronger than Zen. But the pro scene is going to see that and they're only going to pick Ana because she's 10, 15% stronger. They're never going to pick the character that's slightly weaker, especially for characters like Ana and Zen that are actually really similar in what they let your team do. I think that the fact that they would buff Zen so aggressively, especially with a mechanical change like being able to Discord through shields, I think that's a huge mistake for the game. I hate that they balance things by changing how mechanics work. I think that's really unhealthy. They should change numbers, not mechanics.
Yeah, the buff he's talking about with Zen is obviously the Discord.
But why would you run Ana now? Like, your Ana can't defend herself. Your Ana's going to get Discorded, and you can't do anything about it because you just can't. Like, you can Zarya bubble her. That's literally the only thing that stops Discord now. Is being Zarya bubbled. So you're going to get your Ana Discorded, and then the enemy Tracer, Genji, and Pharah are going to fly into your Ana and kill her in 2 seconds because she can't save herself with Bionade, and she can't kill the Tracer, she can't, like, respond. So, like, you're just not going to run the comp with Ana anymore. Not that Ana is, like, a terrible character or whatever, and, like, there's probably situations where the fact that she can, like, you know, snipe people with heals is still really high value and is still going to be a really, you know, powerful character. Nano Boost is also an incredibly powerful ability. But I just feel like why would you build a comp around Ana anymore? When you could just build a comp around Zen, when he was already very, very close to parity, I think, with Ana.
I'm going to go back to my prediction. I don't think all of these Ana changes are going to go through. I really, really doubt it this time. It seems like a little bit too severe to me.
Which one would you drop? Like, obviously, Bionic Grenade, I think, is the bigger one. Because the damage from the rifle, I think, is fair. The grenade, would you drop the healing or you drop the
I'd do exactly what Jake said in an ideal world. Just start with only nerfing the damage that her biotic rifle does and see if that's enough to balance. I mean, the other thing I would do is we've talked about this a jillion times, is make it so that the anti-heal isn't 100% anti-heal. The anti-heal is like 50%, like what they did with the healing buff. But, you know, for some reason, they really love that anti-heal ability. So that wasn't touched here.
Thing is, like, Ana was too good on too many different fronts. Like, infinite range on her healing, which no one else can match. The fact that she could long range kill people like with her snipe, where Lucio obviously has a hard time, Zen has a hard time with projectile speed. The fact that she could 1v1 up close and personal quite often and quite consistently, like she was just too good on too many different ways. Like how many supports out there can you say should be able to like 1v1 someone? Like Zen, yeah, if you have like Forsaken, if you have like a Zen specialist, you can 1v1 a Tracer, you can 1v1 a Genji sometime. But having Anna be able to do everything she can do and still be able to kill someone 1v1 and keep herself alive is just too much. In terms of like both those changes, I mean, it doesn't matter if you reduce the amount of damage your Bottle Grenade does, you still have the anti-heal factor, which is like the point of Anna right now. Well, not the point of Anna, but is like the big a big selling point of her is the fact that you can stop them from healing for 4 seconds and it has a pretty big range. So you don't really change the fact of that. I don't feel like, I mean, you can pretty much have it do no damage and still teams would pick Anna unless you made these other changes with it.
I mean, I think the big thing is the self-heal. The fact that you can like the ability to save yourself, like I think what you guys are saying is like is right in that like Anna was too much of a, you know, 5-tool player. She could just literally do everything. Like there's no situation which you want something other than Anna, except very, very rare compositions. Because she can defend herself, she can perform at long range, medium range, her ult is good all the time. You don't even need combos. It's just like a really, just like a great, great all around character. But I don't like that they attacked like multiple different parts of her kit at the same time. I feel like the big problem with Anna was honestly just her left click damage. Like the fact that she could just DPS DPSs and just like, you know, win 1v1s. Like I don't think she should be guaranteed to lose a 1v1 in the way that now it's like, you need to miss a lot on Genji or something to lose the 1v1 to an Ana after these changes. I mean, she has to hit you with like the Bionade and 3 left clicks. It's like, wow, like you probably aren't that good at Genji if that's happening to you, or you're really missing and like it's, you deserve to die. But I don't think that it needs to be quite like that far.
But Jake, you know, like
characters like Zen are already incredibly strong. People forget how strong Discord is and like what the potential the characters have in this game. Like supports in this game are massively stronger than they are in almost any other game. Like in terms of most games have supports that are basically heal bots and, you know, maybe they have some utility. But this game has like, I mean, Lucio is incredibly strong. You can heal everyone on your team at once or make them all run faster in a game that's about shooting targets. You can make all the targets move faster. That's crazy. Like that's so strong.
It is. It is strong, but things. With Anna, like I'll pose one question to you, and you know, you were talking about just 1v1, but isn't Genji supposed to counter Anna? Like, isn't, I mean, and shouldn't Genji's have an advantage over Anna? Where right now, I mean, I think they do. You know, like really, really good Genjis probably do have a slightly, you know, just a slight advantage over the really good Annas. But I feel like,
no, I'm sorry, no. I talked to the Vic. Okay. He would never fight Ru Jehong back in.
Okay, so China. It's not even that.
There's no way he could win.
Yeah. Okay. So it's not even that. So he literally is not a counter to.
If you both play perfectly, you should lose unless you have like damage or they don't have cooldowns or something.
Okay, but so given the design of Ana, who has a sleep dart, and the sleep dart is supposed to be her escapability. That's how I always viewed it. Like when they announced her, given that she has that, I mean, I feel like the rest of her kit should be vulnerable to just just to counters, like to people like your typical counters, the Winstons, the Genjis, you know, the Divas being in your face. I mean, right now that's not happening, and that's been always my biggest concern with Ana, is that her survivability is more of the issue than anything else. So it's kind of opposite of what you're saying, which I kind of want to get your opinion on that.
I mean, I think that what I didn't like about the character was that she had so much offensive capability. I liked that she was hard to kill. I feel like that was like a cool thing to have in a support. Because you have a support like Lucio that's like super hard to kill just because he has these like crazy movement abilities and like can be anywhere. He can like knock you back. Like if you're Genji sorting, it's much easier to kill an Ana than it is to kill a Lucio, because a good Lucio was going to like boop you and speed boost and you're just never going to get another swing. You get no dash resets. Your ultimate is gone. Mm-hmm. Like I think one thing is people look at characters like Ana that are, you know, overpowered because especially, you know, they're very good at getting kills specifically. And they're not, you know, Zen seems like it's okay for Zen to get kills because he's like kind of a more damage oriented support. So I like that they nerfed Ana's like bio rifle. I just think that when you're looking at a composition, you're going to run a Lucio because speed is broken in FPSs. And until Blizzard realizes that, until they make more speed options, people are going to keep picking Lucio forever. because it's you move fast, you're harder to shoot. It's busted. It's not really that complicated. But, you know, and then you're deciding, well, do I want a Zen? Do I want an Ana? Because I don't really need, like, the AoE healing because I have Lucio. So the question is, do I want, like, more damage than target focusing abilities? Or do I want, like, more healing and, you know, more, like, tank-focusing abilities? Like, I think Bione is actually much better as an anti-tank ability than Discord is. Weirdly enough, Discord, I think, is even better on squishies than something like a Bionade is, just because of the way the health pools are playing out. And like the fact, like how burst damage works, like i.e. Discord, you can just one shot McCree or one shot Tracer's as McCree or something,
or
two shot Pharah's or something. You know, like a lot more options than you normally would have.
Okay.
So I just feel like I don't like that they did these changes at the same time that they are launching a big buff to Zen, especially a mechanical buff that's like impossible to predict how it'll work. Because now it's like, why would you run a Reinhardt? You get your Reinhardt discorded, you can't stop it, and then the Tracer goes and sticks your Reinhardt, he's dead, one shot. No, you have no counterplay. Like, except don't get stuck, it's which a little is, like, bit good of, luck against a good Tracer.
It's a little bit of hurting, too. You know, like, whenever they do, you know, like, nerfing of a guy and then buffing the possible counterpart, like, everybody's going to go and try, you know, Zen now, even though Ana might not be that bad. I mean, just in theory. Like, if Ana isn't even that bad, because you change it so much, they're all going to go to Zen first and then kind of come back to Ana instead of maybe gradually working off of Ana. So it's generally how the behavior is in the community. Well, why don't we talk about another big one, which is the Winston barrier. So the Winston barrier cooldown now starts when the barrier is placed instead of when it ends, which
it's just back to where we were.
Yeah.
What was it? It was like this in I think open beta even. I think they nerfed it sometime in the double Winstons.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they nerfed it in open beta when double Winston was like super popular. Everyone was playing either double Genji, double Winston, double Lucio, or like double Reapers, Winston, double Genji, double Zed, or double Winston, double Reaper, double Lucio. People were just playing those comps 24/7. So they nerfed it back then. And then since they kind of made one hero limit, enforced one hero limit, Winston's been on the edge. He's been on the edge. Is he viable? Is he strong? Is he medium tier? Right now, he certainly is viable, but really only with dive comps. Like, Winston's good. I'm using hyperbole, but
he's good at anti-dive in some situations.
Yeah, exactly.
I think people just forgot how strong Winston is because of when Reaper was in the meta, the whole Beyblade thing, Reaper would just absolutely wreck Winston plus Roadhog as well. Like, I played against Winston towards the end of Season 3, and I was just like, holy crap, this guy is impossible to kill because no one's running, like, shotgun heroes anymore.
Oh, yeah, people are still going to be playing a lot of Hog in this patch, right? If you're not doing dive.
I think there's going to be a lot of dive. I just feel like, to me, you know, I'm watching it, like, as playing in this like, most recent metagame, having a lot of fun. Like, I think the coolest thing about the most recent metagame was that there was no dominant composition. Like, teams were running things that they felt most comfortable on, but like different teams were running different things that they felt more comfortable on. Like, there wasn't a composition that you just like, okay, look, we need a D.Va. Like, I don't really care what you like playing. We need a D.Va. This character's busted. Like, Ana was probably the only character like that in this most recent patch. But even Ana, some teams were running Zen most of the time, right? Rogue's running Zen most of the time. Occasionally they go Ana, but actually I see
Mercy too.
Yeah. Fair Mercy. I mean. Mercy is one of those characters that is just never going to be viable unless Pharah is viable because she's just ass tier without Pharah. Like, she's unplayably bad. And even with Pharah, she's like pretty bad. I actually just think she's a weak, really, really weak character, and she's never going to be strong unless they fundamentally rework her.
Well, I think she might be transitioning into just more of the low level players. You know, like, she's a very easy player hero to understand, and that might just be her role, you know, in the grand scheme of things.
Anyway, as somebody that adores playing Winston, I love this change. I don't think it's not like insanely huge. It's more on the subtle side, but will definitely make Winston more viable. Having that barrier up a few seconds earlier saves you in all kinds of situations.
Not big? I feel like it's pretty big, is it not?
Well, in the situation in which your barrier was broken instantly, like if you're jumping into like a Roadhog or something and your barrier dies in 2 seconds, then it's a very small change. But if you're in a situation where you got to use the barrier for like 5 seconds, it's like, oh, wow, it's like an impactful change. But I think ultimately it's just going to make the character a little more versatile, it has a little bit more cooldowns to play with. But I also think it's on top of the Zen change. And if the Zen change goes live, then Winston's a lot weaker because the Tracer's just going to blink inside the bubble and you're going to be discorded. You can't stop it. But it's cool because you're probably running a Zen and a Winston too, so it's like, who can do it better?
Oh, God.
I just worry that these patches are running the risk of bringing us back to a situation in which there's a clearly dominant composition, and I think it will be Dive.
Because the fact that you just said that one sentence, who can run it better, just internally pisses me off as a caster, because that's not what I want to see.
I love seeing different styles. I love seeing when we play Immortals, we're like, we know that Immortals is going to be running like a stable control setup, because that's literally always what they run. They never run anything else. So when we play against them, we're like, we're playing against Immortals style. And there's some teams that are, I think, have a big advantage, like our team, in that we can pull out lots of different styles. And we're like, we were actually running different styles throughout a series, like different compositions, different strategies, just based on like what we feel like makes the most sense in the situation. Or if one style isn't working, we switch to another. I think I really love metas like that, that have options and choice for in matches and outside of matches as you practice new strategies. But I'm scared that these patches are going to make Zen comps just better on almost every situation than Ana comps. So you might as well just run Dive. And then it is a situation of who can run it better. And I don't think it's fun to watch. I think it's much more fun to watch and fun to play when teams are running different styles, or at least even the same style, different heroes, right? This team feels like the McCree's better. This team feels like the Genji's better. This team wants a Zarya. This team wants a D.Va. You know, like little subtleties like that, I think, make for more interesting counterplay than like which Rein had the bubble when he pinned the other Rein, right, and like which Bionade hit the Rein with a bubble off. Like that it really determines most fights in Miracles.
So they were a month in Melee, basically, in January.
Yeah, exactly. It's like when we played Quad Tank. It was literally like, because we realized Quad Tank was busted and that like it was better than everything in any situation, and there was no reason not to run it in basically any situation, except the occasional Mei. Or like once in a while you run something else, like one hero flexes.
Right.
We realized it was better than anything else, and then we were better in the mirror than anyone else because we had practiced it more than other people. So we won all the games. Like, it wasn't because most teams started to realize that Quad Tank was overpowered, and then they started running Quad Tank. But we had played it so much we could just win the mirror match because we knew how all the little interactions worked.
Yeah.
And like, I don't think that's a healthy way for the game to be, even though it benefited us.
All right. Well,
can we talk about the Sombra change?
Yeah,
Sombra change too. Now. Exactly. The Sombra is.
This is actually insane. The cooldown for the translocator. This is currently on PTR, so it may not go to live. But the translocator cooldown reduced from 6 seconds to 4 seconds. That's a 33% increase in the number of translocators you could have. I mean, decreasing the amount of time between translocators. And basically, it means that, like, Sombra might be unkillable like this. Like, Sombra's already a really good Sombra that knows how to play around their translocator, is already super difficult to kill. This could make Sombra actually OP. Like, I'm already on the fence thinking that like Sombra is about to take the world by storm. Just because, like, I don't know, I was playing against a really good Sombra in ranked. If you don't see her coming, she will hack you before you can do anything about it. Like, she will, like, the hack range is pretty far. It's less than a second. If she has any additional buffs to her mobility, which this is a massive buff to her mobility, she's going to be so hard to kill, running around hacking packs all over the place, never dying. Yes, she doesn't contribute a ton in a huge team fight if she doesn't have her ult, but
put Discord,
I don't know,
on
this,
it.
This is huge.
Put Discord on somebody, she can do decent damage.
Well, the thing is with Sombra, like, not only does it make her more slippery in fights, but also reduces her downtime when it comes to fighting.
Yeah.
And that was like, something so frustrating playing Sombra is the fact that you have to wait. All right, 6 seconds, I have to wait here to literally sit my health pack because I need to be able to throw it back down again so I can get the healing and get my ult back up. But it makes her just so she can return back to the fight 2 seconds quicker, which in Overwatch, 2 seconds is a long time. But even the stealth change they did with the sound effects, the distance change is actually pretty big as well, because the amount of times like you're playing support and you could just hear Sombra, whatever the hell she says, you know, de-stealthing, you would know, okay, she's near, we'd like get a little bit more careful, get a little closer. But the fact that it's now 15 meters, I don't want to know what it was before, but I'm assuming that's a big change, like in terms of distance, means you can be a lot more stealthy and sneaky.
I think it's cool. I mean, ranked aside, I don't think it really changes her core problem in organized games, which is that when the enemy team runs a Sombra, you walk into them and their team is trash because they have five players. And if they don't have any MP, you win.
Right.
Which is like, the character is never going to, I mean, the problem with the character, I think at a fundamental level, is you just punish her so aggressively. Like, on some maps, like, you know, there's maps like Temple of Anubis where she had, like, a mega to hack that was, like, so high utility that it made up for the fact that you have a Sombra on your team. And in, like, ranked games, it's especially effective because things like you know, like your Sombra is going to uncloak in the back line in like one clip your Ana. But when your Ana is like one of the best Anas in the world, it's not going to happen. Like she's going to turn around and 1v1 the Sombra and she's going to lose every time. Even with Ana nerfs, I still think Ana will be able to 1v1 Sombra. That'll be like the DPS she has no problem with, at least at like a high skill level. Assuming both players are at the same high skill level. So I think the key problem with Sombra is still going to remain the key problem in ranked play or in organized play. Rank, I think she just got better in ranked mode. Cody's probably going to have higher elo. But I just think the character is like, I like the character as a niche pick. I don't think she should be like a core power pick. Like, I think that's not like that interesting to have like a stealth high mobility hero that's super annoying to kill that hacks health packs. I don't really want that in every game. It's annoying. It's not fun. EMP is not fun. It's like, I recognize that it's good for the game in some sense, but I don't want it to be like a standard core pick. And I like they're not buffing her DPS to prevent her from being that. I think this is a good change, but also it's not as impactful as it seems because most of the time your translocator is on its 15 second timer and rather than its 6 second cooldown. Like it makes her get back into the fight a little quicker, but I don't feel like that was her problem so much. It's that when she's in the fight, she's kind of bad. And all you do the same thing you did before, which is you force her to teleport out. And now she's like, it's like slightly less of a win by forcing her to teleport out, and it's 2 seconds less efficient than it was before. Mm-hmm. Like you take her out of the fight for slightly less time. But I don't know. It'll be hard to say without playing it. I think she'll be still a niche pick. I don't think she's going to be not in like organized play at least. I think in ranked she's probably going to get really good with this change. Especially the stealth change is probably really big in ranked. But if you're communicating, you just like, you know the Sombra's behind you in ranked and in competitive. Even if you don't hear her, you're like, look, they have a Sombra. I don't see her. She's behind us. Like, wow, exactly. It's so complicated, you know. So that means your supports are like turning around and waiting for people, and your teammates are not letting each other get hacked. They're like checking each other's backs and stuff.
Right.
But in ranked play, it doesn't really happen. So she might be really good.
Okay. Well, why don't we wrap up the PTR now? Because we still got some news and some events to talk about. Let's talk about the big news. Kind of big reason why we have Jake on here, which is Hammer Esports now has become or has been acquired by Luminosity Gaming, and you guys are now LG Evil, which, interesting they chose Evil for you guys, and what was previously the main Luminosity roster is now LG Loyal. So how do you feel about that? Or how do you feel just generally about being picked up by Luminosity?
I know why they're called Evil.
Yeah, exactly. Would you rather be Evil or good?
No. They're called Evil for a reason, because LG got so pissed off from their main roster losing to Hammer Esports that they're like, damn it, you guys are so evil. Like, that's probably why they're called
that. You guys have beat that your other sister team a lot of times recently.
Many times recently.
That's true.
That's true. So how do you feel, Ben? How do you feel about being picked up by Luminosity?
It's awesome to be part of an organization with like the reach and the brand of Luminosity Gaming and the opportunities that presents to us as professional players. Especially from like just the salary perspective, I know a lot of our players can have more freedom now to like actually pursue this game more professionally. I think the cool thing for us, a big thing, is that we're actually able to work with like Luminosity. Like, they can get us everything we need. I know like a bunch of our players had like, you know, I know Train was playing on like 100 FPS for, I mean, as long as we've been playing together.
100 bad.
Well, 100 frames. I mean, he had 144 hertz monitor. It's like, if you're playing, if I'm playing 144 hertz monitor and you can upgrade from 100 frames to 200 frames, that's really big. Like, you know, it's just fucking $400.
I get like 70 FPS constant and I'm on 60 hertz monitors. What am I doing? Oh my God.
I mean, it's hard to say, because like, I got top 500 I was studying abroad in the Netherlands for season one, and I got top 500 on a MacBook Pro with boot camp and like 45 frames. So it's like not like it like stops you from being good at the game. It's just the game is like a lot easier to play when you have really high frame rate, really high and like 144 hertz. So Super got a 144. Everybody who needed one got like CPUs and GPUs. So getting all that stuff just like materially bettering us at the game is awesome. And then we're all really excited to be behind a brand as big as LG. It's a big opportunity for all of us.
Did you get a
question? I want to ask you a question. Okay.
Go ahead, Jade.
You probably can't talk about it, but what's the length of your guys' contract? That should be okay to say.
What I can tell you is that it's almost certainly not going to matter, because when Blizzard comes and says, look, all your contracts have to look like this, it's long enough to like go into the timer and the Overwatch League isn't going to start.
Well, I'm worried if like people are still signing contracts that extend past the September date, which was already announced, does that now mean that Luminosity can get major money from buyouts if they don't actually get a spot in the Overwatch League? For instance, like if a team wants to buy out individual players or your team, do they like get, oh, hey, well, all right, pay us $1 million for our roster for the league even though they're like they maybe don't have a spot in the league.
Yeah, I think it could work like that. I don't think that will be an issue. Well, I can't make specific.
I mean, it doesn't really involve the teams, though. I mean, you're making. I mean, it's not going to affect you, like whether you get bought out or not, unless teams just don't want to even get bought out by a contracted teams.
Yeah, I mean, if they want to like keep us in like player limbo, we don't have to like play the game for them if they want to keep paying our salaries. I mean, that would be like annoying for me that I would just be like being paid a bunch of money to like not play Overwatch competitively. I would be like, I would like to play competitively. I don't really think that's in Luminosity's interest to like withhold us. Right. And it's also something that like, Steve, the owner of the org, is really not about in general.
I'm not saying they'll do it. I'm just like thinking of always like the worst case scenario.
Yeah,
with IDDQD and Fnatic, he basically got held hostage in his contract.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is that part of the reason why we as a team are really comfortable with like longer term contracts is that I don't like we're not changing anything. Like I'm not cutting players. I'm not subbing players out, which is something that the org has been totally comfortable giving us control over. So that combined with the fact that Blizzard is very likely going to say, look, if your contracts don't look like this, you can't play in the Overwatch League, even though they're not going to like buy out every contract, which they've said, they're going to basically say, if you want to play in the Overwatch League, your contracts need to have these things in them, like, you know, creating that standard for player treatment, whatever that's going to look like. The contracts are going to need to be rewritten and they're going to need to change.
Yeah.
So for us, we've, you know, guaranteed ourselves like, you know, some a significant period of like certainty that we'll be paid, which is cool. But mostly it's just an understanding that once the Overwatch League comes around, things are going to be radically changing anyway. So it's not going to be hugely consequential.
So were you guys approached by other huge organizations? And if you were, then why Luminosity over them?
I think Luminosity, we really liked, personally, I really like Steve. I feel like he has like the right mindset to, as an ex-player, he has the right mindset of like how to run an org and how to, you know, create that win-win scenario where you're both building a brand, but also creating a sustainable career for, you know, all the players who are, you know, committing our lives to these things. So we really liked that sort of trust that he had in us and that we felt like we could have in him. And then that combined with Luminosity as like a brand that we, you know, has some pull in esports, and, you know, some things I can't announce.
More things you can't announce until next week.
I cannot.
I don't like this Jake guy. Usually I'm the one doing this. Yeah, there's some Overwatch tournaments coming up in Europe. I just can't tell you what it's about, but now he's stealing all my thunder.
Unlucky. but Overwatch tournaments in Europe, you're lying. So I mean,
sorry, your best teams are.
It's a bunch of things I can't exactly talk about everything that made us really want to go to LG. But
okay, sure.
To make a long story short, it's the right org for us. They give us all the support we need, and we feel like it's the best possible home for us to succeed in.
Did Echo awesome. Fox approach you guys?
No, actually.
Really?
A few orgs that I don't want to name because they have teams and they were going to drop them, so.
You, what? You mean you weren't just going to be evil for them, too?
No. So, the other orgs, LG was actually one of the few orgs that was interested in signing a second team as opposed to dropping their entire roster for us. Which I was like, I don't really love the idea of being a part of something like that, but
wow, okay, that's interesting.
Ben,
you're gonna say something.
So Ben, first of all, we were all just dead wrong. After you got off the show last week, I'm like, Chris, they're going to TSM.
Yeah, that's what I was 100%. Saying too, man.
I really thought you guys were going to TSM, but congrats on getting picked up by
Absolutely.
LG. I want to know what's next for your team. You do have a coach and a coach/manager and an analyst. And you got the new sponsor. What's the plan? Are you moving into a team house? Do you know the location? Can you announce that?
There's like a team house available. I think the weird thing though is that a lot of our players like can't actually make the commitment to full-time professional. Like me, I mean, I still have another semester of college left, like a semester and a half or something. Mom, if you're watching this, I'm
not
trying not to drop
September?
Out. We'll see. We'll see. Honestly. Don't tell my mom about
looks
that
a
one.
Break. It looks like a break from school, at least.
Yeah,
at least
yeah.
A semester.
I'm already graduating early with a double major, but we'll see. I think I'll be done in time. We'll figure it out. If not, I think the school is willing to work with me, though. They've never had someone in this position, but I think
exactly. That's kind of cool. That's kind of cool that the schools. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah. It's a small private liberal arts college, so they're like pretty supportive, and I actually know the president pretty well personally, so he picks it up.
Okay, good. Well,
but like a lot of our players are in school. Like Super is 16. He's like a junior in high school.
Oh, he's 16. So
like,
oh, yeah. He's
16. We're going to have to. Wow. Exactly. Like obviously, Super can't move into a team house while he's in high school. If you want to
get how young you guys are, it's like crazy.
But yeah, like most of our players are in school for at least like we've. Train's actually a sophomore in college, although he's at a bigger school, so I think it'll be easier for him to just like take a hiatus.
Is there an issue with age in Overwatch League?
Yeah, you have to be 18.
Oh. I think it's. I don't think Blizzard said specifically. I think it's like they had another thing with another game where
LCS
they had
17.
They had 17 in another game, which Super will be before the Overwatch League comes out. I don't know. Hopefully, it's not an issue. I'd be surprised if it were because there's a lot of like high level professional Overwatch players that are not 18.
It just might be a labor thing. It's a little tricky.
It'll be interesting. I'd be surprised if Blizzard didn't find a way to make allowances. It seems like almost every esport, every like really serious esport, except probably LCS or League in general, it has sub 18 competitors, and I think it's a good thing for the esport in general, in the sense of it's like available to those people because those people who are not 18 are the best players in the game. Like I don't think they're should be things preventing them from playing.
Yeah, sure.
If there's a way for Samael to win $20 million at a TI, I don't see how that could be wrong.
Yeah. Okay.
I feel like labor laws might just be outdated, and I'm sure there's a way to make that work.
All right. I mean, another bit of news just with Overwatch League that I think Slasher actually tweeted was that there were some details or a little bit more or at least confirmed details that not from Blizzard itself, but from let me bring it up. From SDJ is that Blizzard's seeking 2 to 5 million from team owners to buy into Overwatch League. And there was even one particular spot, LA, which obviously is a huge, huge gaming. I mean, it's going to be a high priority type of spot compared to a lot of the other cities, is going for 10 to 15 million, or at least they're asking for that. 2 to 5 million, I think that was probably in range of what I was thinking. At least the lower end of it was closer to what I was thinking. But the big talk right now is that, all right, are they, like most of the endemic esport organizations, this is like too high for most of them, or a lot of them. So, Blizzard having to reach beyond, just endemic esports folks and trying to get investors that way. And what does that really mean for esports? We've always had this faction that was all of, more on the side of, man, the people that started it, we want them a big part of the league. And then the other, the other half is just like, well, it's just about, pushing it to the next level, getting, just new money into the scene and all that good stuff. So what do you guys think about this? Just the buy-in, just how much the buy-ins are.
We could do like an entire 3-hour show on this topic alone. I have so many things I want to say about this.
We'll save it for next week.
We'll try to keep it real short. My initial gut reaction is that does sound high, but you have to remember this is literally one of the biggest games in PC gaming history ever. In terms of raw sales numbers, it is the best-selling competitive PC game of all time. Doesn't include free-to-play, so it's not including Dota 2 and League of Legends, but you have to keep in mind that this is literally the biggest purchasable competitive PC game on the market right now to this date. And we talked about the interview. If you haven't seen last week's episode, you might want to go back and listen, but we talked a little bit about the interview Nate Nanzer did. He put a huge emphasis on sharing revenue for in-game, potentially things like in-game purchases, merchandising, broadcast rights directly with the teams. So when you're buying into Overwatch League, you're not just buying in to have a right to play in the league. You're also buying in to buy into the revenue share that's part of this. So yes, $2 to $5 million is extremely high, especially considering the fact that no Overwatch tournament has actually gotten like crazy insane viewership. The best viewership we've had was the World Cup, which did really well. It had over 200,000. But since then, no tournament has gotten more than like 60, 70, 80,000 concurrent viewers at very most. In fact, a lot of them have been in closer to the 20, 30, 40K range.
What?
Other than Atlantic Showdown. I said after.
That's rare, dude.
Fist bump anyway, that one.
I'll fist bump that one. Yeah. So it sounds really high, and it's a huge risk. It's absolutely a huge risk, and a lot of people are going to be turned off. A lot of insiders are kind of thumbing their nose at this. But at the same time, you're buying into what is potentially the most ambitious, most unique, potentially the best revenue generating esports league ever conceived. I mean, all of this is ifs, buts, ands, and maybes. Nothing is even close to confirmed here. But at the same time, I think that this, I get a sense what they're going for here. And just to really quickly address, like, oh, all the endemic teams are never going to be able to pay for this. True, but I think what Blizzard wants here, if you go back to BlizzCon, all of the team owners and the NBA owners and the endemic owners and the sports execs were in the same room at the same time, I think for a reason. I think that they want these sports owners to actually partner directly with the endemic esports teams. Mm-hmm. So I don't buy this, like, oh, they're butting out the old guard. They're going to have no way to, like, get into the league. No, I think Blizzard absolutely wants the endemic esports teams in this league. Anyway, that's my summarized
thoughts. This is good for endemic esports teams too. Like, everybody thinks that, like, the endemic esports either getting bought or getting, you know, or partnering or selling, like, majority share, you know, things like that is such a bad thing for these endemic owners or esport owners. It's like, a lot of them, that's exactly what they wanted, guys. You know what I mean? So, you know, a lot of them are actually even keeping the brand in a lot of cases too. So I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing for that to happen. What you're talking about, Fishsticks, hopefully that happens though. You know, I can kind of understand if that was completely pushed out. These people come in, they literally have no idea what they're doing. You know, maybe their esports team is literally a very inexperienced team and potentially disaster. You know, that's potentially disastrous, to be honest. So hopefully they don't do that. They'll do their due diligence and partner up with the correct, you know, organizations. But overall, it's a full commitment, guys. I mean, I think they've been very clear about the Overwatch League. It's no joke. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even half-assed at all. We're going full out trying to make a crazy professional league that's going to be, you know, it's going to be very similar to a traditional sports, you know, league and having franchises like that. This is along the same lines. So this doesn't surprise me at all. I just hope that the revenue that, you know, whatever the revenue strategy is going to be a successful one. That's the only thing I'm concerned about.
Only other subnote is that when you buy into this league, you buy a franchise spot and you cannot be relegated. So unlike League of Legends, where investors have spent 1, 2, 3+ million buying a spot, buying a team, and then that team immediately gets relegated the next season, that won't be the case here. So another thing to keep in mind.
Okay. Well,
I mean, you also get to own like a city slot for an indefinite amount of time, right? Like if you're Cloud Nine, you get to brand yourselves like LA Cloud Nines or whatever you wanted to. Like, you can add that tag to your kind of organization name, at least for Overwatch. And not to mention, put a lot of investment into like that city as being your main city, where you can put gaming houses that can be used by multiple different, you know, games and such. I don't really think it's that much money. I just think it's really showing Blizzard wants to have a lot of capital to build up something big with this.
That's true.
But the amount of people that are going to be willing to pay that with not really, I mean, hopefully like owners are getting more information than the public has, because like with the amount of information I've gotten about the league, I wouldn't invest that kind of money. Like, I would want to be able to have a sit down, you know, with Nate Danzer, the head of esports, and just talk and like have some sort of reassurance that my investment of $2 to $5 million, you know, to $15 million is going to be worth it. And it's still even a bidding war. It's not like a, all right, I'll pay $2 million, I have the slot. It's if someone's to pay $2 million and $1, then all right, well, I lost the slot.
Well, you know, when people invest in things, and I don't know how much experience people have with VCs. You know, typically when VCs go and invest in a startup company or whatever, they're looking for, you know, 10 to 50x in return. So, I mean, I think that is really what, you know, Blizzard has to be able to provide for folks. Because, I mean, there's a lot of people with a lot of money. You just have to, like, convince them that they're going to make money. They're going to make a lot of money off of, you know, investing in this. Otherwise, all you're going to get are these people that are just super passionate about it. They have money that can kill, you know, loss leader or whatever, and you know, that's all you're going to have. And that's not a good recipe. That's kind of like what esports has always been built on, or at least in the past. It's been getting better, like, obviously, in the most recent years. But, you know, you have to have a solid business, like a revenue model that's going to be able to convince people who've invested and made millions and billions in some cases from, you know, their previous endeavors. And that's hard for me to imagine right this second. I don't even know what that is. Like, I can't even imagine what the pitch would even look like. Given, like you said, Fish, like Ben, it's like our viewership numbers don't even come close to even paying like a fraction of that. So I'm sure they have something obviously mapped out that's going to be amazing. I just No idea what that is. I don't think any of us have an idea what that is, except for maybe the owners have, are privy to some of it.
I would say, like, the biggest thing is that, one, you're looking at traditional sports franchises, like, that are looking to buy into this mostly. Like, I mean, of course, there's other, like, VC that could be coming in, but a lot of it is going to be coming from traditional sports franchises looking to expand their brand into esports.
That's a good point.
And not necessarily viewing esports as, like, a unique investment, but more of, like, an investment in their own brand and their own, you know, the power of that brand. So something like $2 to $5 million is kind of chump change when your NBA team is worth $1 billion, right? And which isn't actually out of, you know, the realm of possibility. That's like, you know, that's like the top 12 NBA teams, I think, are worth more than $1 billion, something like that.
Yeah.
So there is, the capital is certainly there. And then as far as like ROI goes, I would say if you look at, you know, like especially the way the market, the modern market is pricing things. I mean, Snapchat had an IPO where they just like, you know, quadrupled the value of their company while saying that we have no fucking idea when we're ever going to turn a profit. You know,
they have value though. I mean, they have a crap load of users, you know, that is incredible value.
User growth, yeah. And they have people's attention. I think ultimately what it boils down to is they have attention and they have, you know, they have users. But I think, you know, if you're an investor, you're looking at esports, you're looking at something like video games, which as like a broad, just as an industry has had, you know, 10% year over year growth for decades, like just like freaky growth and like showing no signs of slowing. More kids are playing video games today than ever before in any time in history. That number is probably not going to go down ever in our lifetimes. I mean, in terms of like this is like the trend. I mean, the possibility of esports growing to this like a similar level of market share that like traditional sports have today, I don't even think is out of the question within the next 30, 40 years. So I do think that, you know, a lot of these league owners and people with billions of dollars to blow, you know, they might be looking for 10 to 50X, but if they have like a 20-year time horizon, I really just don't think that's unreasonable at all.
Yeah.
It's something that's becoming more and more mainstream, and it's something that is, I would say, mostly limited by the platforms. You know, the fact that everyone has to watch these like on Twitch or something, right? Like, you know, I think once there's the kind of market penetration of interest in things like esports, you're going to be able to see things like esports broadcast on major television networks. And actually, you know, justifying it with their viewership and their ratings. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is like, you know, impossible to guarantee. And there's no way to like prove that until it actually, you know, happens. But I think the demographics of people's interest in video games and how it's spreading through demographics and it's not, you know, isolated to like sub 25 white males is, you know, you're getting in these demographics that advertisers really want demand for. And you're getting in these demographics in an authentic way. In a way that they feel is like accessible and that they actually feel connected to those brands and think connections like that. I mean, even though they're not immediately, you know, monetary, they're incredibly valuable. And investors today are really, really aware of the value that things like that have, you know, things like authenticity are incredibly rare in today's market.
Yeah. And so those are definitely good points. Okay. Well, we'll just have to wait and see what happens there. Okay. Well, let's kind of move on. Let's try to get to events here. We've actually still got Apex to talk about. So,
I'm just going to throw in really quickly, breaking news. Hammers has picked up the Shavs. So your old Hammers is not going to be without an Overwatch team.
I told him.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I just wanted to throw that in there. People were talking about it in chat. They picked up the primarily European squad, actually a bunch of Brits on it.
The Chavs.
The Chavs. Okay.
Shout out to Fisher. Best Genji EU.
All right, cool.
So
I want to give a quick shout out to just all the folks listening on iTunes. The Overview is not only available on Twitch, it's also available on iTunes as well as Google Podcasts and SoundCloud. And we actually got a good number of people that download and listen to it every week. So folks that leave us 5-star reviews really, really helps when people are looking for Overwatch podcasts on those channels. So big shout out to Slow Salt the Apples, A Bagel, and Dolphin Laugh for leaving some 5-star reviews for us on iTunes. Really, really appreciate that. And if you want to help the show, go and leave us some good reviews. That'd be amazing. Let's get into some events. I guess real quick, just with Carbon, since we have Jake. I mean, you guys are just crushing Carbon. And last night, you beat Immortals again, which, you know, going into Carbon, I would have said Immortals, you guys, and maybe even Renegades were really the top teams, you know, in this league, or would be the top teams in this league. But you guys are making it very, very clear that you guys are easily the top team right now in Carbon. And I don't know, just briefly, like, what are you thinking right now in terms of the league and chances of winning?
I mean, 5-0, I'd say it speaks for itself. Looking to go 6-0 tonight. Our match is at 8:15 EST if you want to tune in. But against Complexity. So we're looking to, I mean, close out the playoff or close out the group stages flawlessly. Because I think that really just sends a message in playoffs and gives you, you know, a psychological advantage going into that. I would say as far as teams go, having teams like Rogue and Selfless not be in the Carbon Series, I mean, if we don't win at all, I'd be a little disappointed, frankly, because I really think that those two teams are the two teams I actually am worried about in North America. I think Immortals, teams like LG Loyal, Renegades, there's teams with a lot. They have deep talent pools, really, really strong players, you know, filling those rosters. Weirdly enough, they're not able to convert in the way that I see other teams do. I don't exactly know why. Like, it's hard to explain things like that. I didn't expect to go 3-0 against Immortals. I mean, I expected to win. I guess I go in every match expecting to win. But I think part of it is that our team has really, you know, accelerated over time. Like, with every win and with every loss, honestly, we kind of get more confident. We feel like we have more knowledge about the game, and we work together better. And then I see other teams having a tough time, and that's leading to a downward spiral. It's leading to, you know, they take a loss, and then the next game, then, you know, they don't feel so good about it. You know, players are going for big solo plays. You know, the team falls apart, and they're losing fights. They're using too many ults to win fights. So I think it's a classic NA issue. Is like, you know, like these teams are really momentum based, and while that can be good when you have momentum, when the wind is out of your sails, you know, you need to be able to reset and like hit it twice as hard next game. And I think that's something that's really rare in NA, which is something that's allowed us to rise to the top.
Okay. Well, yeah, definitely check that out. It's tonight, right? Tonight, what time, like 10 or so?
I believe it's 8:15. I think we have the early slot. 8:15.
Okay, you're the first match tonight.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So I think they're the first match tonight. Yeah, definitely check that out, guys, on the Carbon Twitch channel. But why don't we talk a lot about Apex, given that Apex has... we've had, what, 4 matches, I think, since the last time we had a show, and... It was Envy's group with Lunatic High, Kongdun, Uncia, and Runaway, and lots has happened, guys. Jason, did you get a chance to check out Apex or all the VODs and everything since you've been back?
Thailand.
Yeah,
no,
so
I've been sick.
Oh, you've been sick.
Like,
okay.
The last 3-4 days.
No problem. I was just gonna see what you thought.
Wait, can we do spoilers? People have had time to watch, right?
Yes.
We can at least do last week's spoilers for sure.
We can definitely do spoilers.
Okay, let's do spoilers. It's fine.
And he's out of the tournament.
Stop
listening. If you too late. Don't want spoilers.
Stop listening if you don't want to hear spoilers about Apex. Okay, let's talk about Envy. Go ahead, Jason. I'll let you start.
He's out of the tournament.
Yes.
The last American bastion has fallen in Korea. And now Korea runs the world for Overwatch. Just every other game.
Yeah.
So Envy lost to Lunatic High 3-0, which I thought was really unexpected. I thought they'd put up a little bit of a better fight in that one. And they lost to Kangdu Uncia.
Which was even bigger surprise to my
Yeah, it was 3-2. It was a very close score line. This is something we talked about last week though. This Envy squad doesn't really seem like they're suited for the current meta that's so dependent on dive compositions, particularly focused around Genjis and Tracers. There isn't a Genji and Tracer main or somebody that really excels in those roles on this Envious squad. They performed so well when Taimu was playing a lot of Roadhog, when they're doing triple tank, even with Taimu on Widowmaker and McCree and 76, you know, and Harry Hook on 76 sometimes. You know, they really excelled. However, the current meta, just not their friend.
Yeah,
it's really sad.
They're trying to like figure something out, and a lot of times it ends up being this triple tank composition, and puts a ton of pressure on Taimu to perform, just to really make huge plays too. So, and whoever's playing DPS, you know, whether Taimu's playing Roadhog or he's playing Widow, and they're forced into that kind of strategy, which is something we haven't really seen for them. I think the last two metas they've had perfect they had a roster that was perfect for the last two metas, so we really haven't seen that hole happen until now.
The thing about Envy is, and even when they're back in named IDDQD, they always played the super standard game really well. They were unmatched and unparalleled when it came to playing super standard in like the current metas at the time. They have not needed to ever flex different heroes to pull out a Genji, to pull out a little bit more of an in-depth hero pool, or have a couple different players flex to heroes maybe not necessarily as comfortable with. And eventually, it was bound to come back and bite them in the ass, I feel like. Like, if you can't show that you can adapt and flex and play some different heroes, then you know, eventually you're going to get into a meta that you're not good at, and you're not going to be the top team anymore.
Yeah, I mean, Jake, what did you get a chance to check catch the Apex VODs at all or no?
I watched a couple of them, not all of them. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I just watching Envy, I don't know. I worry that their hero pool is not as deep as other teams, especially the Korean teams who aren't ever scared to, like, you know. I think they play a lot of the same consistent heroes, but they are, like, always ready to learn new things, you know, always ready to bring out, like, a new style. And they tend to sort of stick with the style that they have, and they don't really change it throughout a given series. But, like, between series, you know, they're ready to innovate. And, like, mm-hmm. if you pull out a strat on them, like, you pull out that Widowmaker on them, you know, it might work because they don't really know how to deal with it in first fight. But next fight, you know, or next series, when they've talked about it and they figured it out, like, they're not going to be caught unawares, you know. Like, they're ready to adapt, especially series to series. They're ready to like, learn and grow. And then, you know, I see Envious as a team that, I mean, one-dimensional is probably the wrong way to describe them, because I do think they have a lot of really, really talented players. But I do think their hero pools are kind of stacked on, like, you know, the hit scan side of things. Yep. Like, Taimu has a nice Roadhog, and there's definitely exceptions to it. But I just feel like that team doesn't have a great Genji player. And I think Genji's really, really strong this patch. And I think you really want a great Genji player or a great Pharah player. And not that their players can't play those characters, but it shows that they're not incredibly comfortable on them, right? Like, it's awesome to have players who are really, really comfortable on every single hero in the game. And not just that one individual needs to be, but that, you know, spread across your roster, there's, you know, the ability to comfortably flex to every character or any roster that you know, want to be running from a strategic perspective. So, you know, while Envy is really good at just fearlessly running triple tank McCree and just, like, you know, Harry Hook hits all the shots and they win, you know, when that becomes a little weaker and, you know, he can't quite perform to that highest level possible, then, you know, actually executing those strategies becomes really difficult. And then, you know, especially the Koreans, you can't just play one thing into them over and over again and expect to keep winning, because they will adapt and they will figure out your strategy. And if you're not ready to continuously adapt alongside them and continuously change your strategy, then eventually they're just going to overtake you and outsmart you.
So yeah, that begs the question, you know, and we brought it up a little bit when Tailspin left, but, you know, looking at it now, Tailspin actually does have a lot of those abilities that they're missing right now. It's not going to be Tailspin coming back, given, you know, how they left off or whatnot, but it does beg the question of if they, you know, do they need to make a roster change? If they do, then where does it happen?
Or does Mickey switch and play different heroes?
Because I've seen Mickey's Genji. It's not bad.
Yeah, but not bad is not, like, is not as good as Hogsall and who are you and all those Genji, guys.
Yeah, I mean, then who's playing Winston, or are they doing triple DPS? Like, do you have Taimu go back to Hog? Like, I don't know.
And this also goes back to something that we talked about with Lunatic High picking up Zumba. And...
Yeah, it's the extra people, the extra bench players, right?
Wow, why can't I remember who the other person they picked up was for Lunatic High? Zumba and
who are you?
Yeah. Because we talked about having, like, specialists on a roster and flexing them in whenever they're really strong in the current meta. I mean, Jake would probably be the best person to ask about this out of all of us. How many heroes do you think is viable to expect a person on your team to master completely, like, to the level of, you know, Taimu's Widowmaker, Taimu's McCree, or to Vix Pharah or his Genji?
Well,
like,
if they play Lucio, just one.
Gotta get that Torb flex, though.
Torb, exactly, right?
Like, what's the viable number of heroes you expect a teammate to be able to fully master, like, to play against the top players in the world?
You got six players. There's you know, 24 heroes in the game. You know, each player should be able to play four heroes. Would be, like, the easy answer to that question. But I also think overlap is valuable in some sense. Like, for example, my team, you know, we have, you know, Train, Vol, and I are all really comfortable on D.Va. Vol is really, really comfortable on Winston, as is Super, but Super can also play Tracer. Like, it's not only that there's flexibility. We have every single player on our team can play Roadhog. Like, actually all six of us can play Roadhog, at, like, a high enough level to be totally comfortable. We had some strategies where we were flexing our Avast off of Lucio and onto Roadhog, actually. But, like, I honestly just think it's like it depends on the metagame. I think if Blizzard balances things the way I hope they do, then that number, that, like, expected hero competency number is going to keep going up. And I hope it keeps going up. I hope it's 25 someday. right? Where like every player needs to be able to just flex everything. All right, there's probably still going to be like two supports, and Lucio's probably going to be busted for the rest of Overwatch, which I don't think is a bad thing. I think the character makes the game better, but is, you know, really fucking good, and you just always want one, virtually always at least. I think it's really just a question of like it really just affects your team's ability level, though. Like in patches where you can't just run one comp into everything, the smaller that number, the weaker your team. Or the smaller that average number is, especially on like, you know, your two, like you usually have like one main tank player and two support players. And aside from that, in this meta, the other three players need to be able to flex to lots of different things, you know, like need to be able to be ready to run triple DPS, but also triple tank and one DPS, also quad tank sometimes, you know, also with a different tank and then the other three DPS, you know. So really it's, I think it's a, I don't think there's like an expectation, I guess you could say. I think it's just like there's no limit. There's no limit at which that stops mattering. Because when you're, you know, when I can play McCree and also Soldier, but you know, Genji and Pharah and Mei, but also Roadhog and D.Va and Winston and Zarya, like when you have like, you know, your numbers like 10 or 15 that you feel really comfortable playing at the highest level, then that's when you're not like, that's when you're no longer bound by your competency. Because if your competency is a bind, if you're like, look, I don't feel like I can play that hero, even though it's the strategically, like even though, you know, from a strategic perspective, you're like, look, this is clearly the best hero to pick. You're just like, look, I don't feel comfortable. We can't do it.
Right. Yeah.
Then your team's not playing perfectly. Like you're not playing optimally.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that's the future of Overwatch 2 is just being able to, I think, switch compositions during an actual game or a series. So I think having bench players will be good for maybe when you have, I don't know, Koth strategies versus, you know, Pele strategies, or and they're significantly different. But overall, yeah, I think versatility is just the future right now, and you're seeing it. Like, it's more and more they're becoming more versatile.
So then, are you saying, Jake, that Misfits like should hands down be the best Western team in time?
Yeah,
in I keep time. Thinking that.
I think we all talked Misfits up.
C9 too. It's like,
oh, I mean, it's just one factor, right? Like, there's things like team coordination that like doesn't matter if every player on your team can play everything if they don't play the things coordinated. You know, it's not just a matter of like their individual ability to like get to the top of the ranked ladder on those heroes. I think that's like one piece of the puzzle is like your just mechanical ability on those heroes. But then there's the whole X factor of like, can you play Genji in a way that complements your team, even when you're running a different player on Winston than you were last game because you want to accommodate the D.Va and the Tracer, you know, whatever. Like, I think the challenge is, can you maintain that, like another way to rephrase that competency number? Because I think it's sort of an oversimplification of, like, I can play XYZ heroes. Can you play XYZ heroes in a way that your team is, like, playing around you? Like, do you know how to fill the role that your team needs you to fill? And even as that role changes, right? Like, you might still be playing Genji, but, like, because your teammates went to triple tank as opposed to, like, you know, double tank with a Tracer, then you need to be fulfilling a different role and playing differently. And having that flexibility to like radically change your own play style just because of those small things coming up and changing is what really, I think, defines the competency number. Like, I wouldn't say someone was competent at playing all the heroes if they didn't fulfill the role that their team needs of them. Like, you could be amazing at Tracer and just be like mechanically sick at Tracer. I guess Tracer is a bad example because if you're mechanically sick at Tracer, you kind of don't care about your team and you just go win the game. Yeah, but like, you're like Winston or something. You could be comfortable on Winston and not being in the right spot all the time to make space for your team and to enable them. So the question is, not only can you play those heroes at a mechanically competent level, at the highest level, but can you also work with your teammates playing their own different roles, even if those roles are changing? Sure. So the flexibility is also a flexibility of your coordination ability. It's not just your mechanical flexibility.
Okay. Well, kind of running out of time here. So why don't we just like fly through the other half, but I mean, really, Runaway is like, I think, the biggest surprise of the tournament, to be honest. I mean, Envy not doing well is one thing, but Runaway was supposed to be one of the worst teams going into the playoffs. And now they're, you know, they pulled an upset over KDU and the Lunatic High, playing amazing. You know, I don't think we have time to really, really go into it, so maybe we'll save it for next week. But they're my favorite team right now in Apex. I'll just tell you right now, just watching the last week or a week and a half of Apex, I've had a lot of fun watching them. So really, really cool to see.
You mean like out of game where they're breaking their area?
Exactly, dude. Man, exactly. Freaking, it was Runner. No, it was, who was it? Was it Runner? I think it was Runner, right? Yeah, Runner is my favorite post-game player now. he freaking freaks out and tackles his teammates and everything afterwards too, as well as breaking lights. But why don't we wrap up? It's been a fantastic show. We filled it up. Man, we filled it up way beyond. Jason stayed awake too, so I think we like totally mission accomplished.
There were some moments there where I had my eyes open, but I was actually asleep.
Oh, wow. Thanks. Great, great.
Mostly when you were talking.
Oh, shut up. Jake, you want to do some shout-outs before you go?
Huge shout-out to LG. Shout-out to all my teammates. Wouldn't have made it anywhere without you guys. Looking forward to many great things coming out of us and alongside LG Evil going forward in Overwatch. Shout-out to my mom. I think she might be watching. Hi, Mom.
All right. Cool. Jason? Shout-outs?
Sorry. Mine's the same ones every week. Parents for let me do what I do, yourself for your opportunity, Mitch for being my partner in crime, Chairman for doing the show, Fishix for being cutie, and Jake for joining us.
Awesome. Ben?
Shout outs to LG for their new pickup. It's a great pickup. Welcome LG Evil to the scene. I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more from you guys. Dude, such a packed show. There's actually even a couple things that we didn't even get a chance
to
mention.
We'll get to it next week.
Bishop's confirmed as C9 head coach. A couple other things happened this week. But we'll save that for another time. I'm going to not be around next week because out at South by Southwest.
Okay.
Once again, thanks to Jake for coming on the show and speaking more intelligently and eloquently than us people who are like paid to speak about it. So nicely done, Jake. Nicely done. Thanks
and
for
he's only what are you, how old are you? 18, 19?
20.
Yeah. And he's such a youngin' too. So
it does look bad, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll
be coming for those casting jobs.
Oh, shoot.
I'm scared. I'm legitimately scared.
No, I thank the three of you guys for doing it. Obviously, that's been a fantastic show. Everybody's been watching too. You guys are great. VODs will be up on youtube.com/ChamMV later tonight, as well as the feed. The iTunes feed is a little bit later, as always. But if you actually have an app that has directly to our audio feeds, you can get it there. SoundCloud too, guys. Like, I know a lot of people listen to SoundCloud. You can find us there as well. But that's it. Oh, follow the show Twitter at the Overview GG, because I'm trying to use it a bit more. I'm really bad about using that account for whatever reason. But check that out for just more show specific news instead of just everything else I'm doing. But that's going to be it for the overview for this week. So for Jake, Jason Kaplan, Fishsticks, and myself, ChamMV, we'll see you next time.